Yep. Oh, shoot, I meant to bring my little pamphlet in here. What am I going to do with it? Go ahead.
Good morning, everybody. I will call to order the regularly scheduled meeting of the Board of Supervisors for this Tuesday, May 21st. Welcome to everybody, and would ask if you would all please rise and join us as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, good morning. I'm glad to see everybody made it through the storms. I would like to ask that we keep in our thoughts some of our neighbors in neighboring states and even here in Iowa who are recovering today from the storms or dealing with the aftermath from the storms. And that will lead us to public comment number one, which is a place on the agenda for members of the public to comment on items on today's agenda. Is there anybody wishing to do so? Seeing no one moving immediately the microphone, we'll move on to consideration of the minutes, and we have the May 14th minutes.
Move approval as submitted.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Further discussion. Clinton.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Minutes pass. Next item is consideration of personnel actions. We have all items.
Move approval.
Second.
Motion and a second. Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Personnel actions pass. Consideration of claims, a little larger claim week this week.
A little larger claims this week.
$2 million, I think.
About that. I would move the claims as submitted.
Second.
Further discussion.
This is typical based on history near the end of the fiscal year when a lot of things have come due. We'll probably see a higher amounts probably from May, June, and before the fiscal year. So I was not overly surprised when I kind of looked at some of the line items that was there. But we like it when it's definitely under $1 million.
Yeah, I was going to say, I understand it's part of the deal, but you don't mind if I don't like it, do you?
Oh, I agree. Okay. I agree.
Clinton.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Claims pass. Consent agenda. We have all items on the consent agenda this morning.
Move approval.
Second.
Motion and second. Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Consent agenda passes. Public hearing items. First consideration of Ordinance 222, adopting the Code of Ordinances for Story County, Iowa. This is the first reading. Wayne, what do I need to read into the record here? Or Leanne,
I believe.
Any advice?
Do you know on the code, this is something that we had been working with. Is this the, why don't you come up and maybe make a quick comment. Was this the information that you had given me with that booklet, the bound booklet here a couple weeks ago that had all the ordinance in it? I'm not sure if this is the same one. Well, I see Assistant County Attorney is going to comment on this regard. Okay.
Jessica Reynolds from the County Attorney's Office. The notice has been published regarding the Code of Ordinances that is available in the Auditor's Office, and this is the public hearing time for anyone to comment on those proposed ordinances that have been made available. And I do believe that Ms. Harder has some comments and recommendations from the Planning and Zoning Commission, so I'd ask that she come up. She submitted a memo that has detailed their requested changes.
Okay.
Good morning.
Good morning.
At their May meeting of Story County Planning and Zoning Commission, the commission did recommend the proposed ordinance changes that are before you through the Code of Ordinances. There are several chapters that are what had formerly been our land development regulations that, as a recommending body, the Planning and Zoning Commission did need to take action on. Through that review, they did recommend 5 modifications to the bound copy that you're reviewing today. As Ms. Reynolds said, those are detailed in a memo that I sent up to the board. I can go over those in more detail if you'd like, but I'll answer any questions.
Probably since this is audio, it maybe just highlight what the 5 basically were. Just give a cursory overview of what they are.
Okay. Section 85.05.157, it references ordinance number 29. It actually needs to be ordinance 209, I believe. It was an error. Again, section 86.10.3.E.9 should be 0.8 at the end. Some wordsmithing to several sections of chapter 87.606.3, rather than all existing and proposed, strike existing and write all proposed and remaining easements located in land to be divided, and so forth. Revise table 88.1 to replace language as presented by staff at that meeting. When it went to the code publishing company, a little blurb, just the layout got changed and modified. And so we had that available. I think Jessica has that already, or we have it available to send. And then in section 92.06.6, clarify the time for conceptual review meeting, who is attending that meeting. It seemed rather vague, and basically that we had the paper show up rather than the applicant or the individual. And just clarify that.
Okay.
And there are some changes to what we commonly have been referring to Chapter 6 and 7 of the Land Development Regulations, which I now believe Chapters 87 and 88. And the rest of the memo does give a summary of those proposed changes that have been vetted through working with members of the interagency review team, and then reviewed by assistant county attorneys, and then through the Planning and Zoning Commission, too. And I can go into those with more detail.
So am I correct to say that by announcing these at this point, and the fact that they are already out available to the public to take a view, and this is first consideration, we will still have another week if there's any additional information that will come back. Will this be something that would go through a second reading before it's finally adopted or not? Is it necessary?
Since these are only minor changes that are being proposed, you don't have to allow for another reading. You are able to adopt the new code of ordinances referencing these minor changes that have been proposed. I do have a draft resolution for that if you should so decide to do that. And we could just attach the memorandum that Ms. Harder has proposed. And that would be at the close of the public hearing. So we don't have to do this three times unless you would all want to do that for some reason.
So the second follow-up question would be, is the proposed changes that are there, you comfortable with and don't see these as really, you see them as very minor revisions, et cetera?
Correct. They're minor enough that we don't have to republish and come back again.
That's what I want.
But that would be your pleasure if you wanted to do that.
Right. Good. Thank you.
Paul, other questions?
Nope.
All right, I will open the public hearing and ask if there is anybody who would like to address Ordinance 222. All right, seeing no one moving to the microphone, I will close the public hearing and turn to the board for your pleasure.
I would move the adoption of Ordinance Number 222 with proposed changes as recommended by Planning and Development.
Second.
Motion and second. Further discussion? Probably before we vote, we need a date for the second reading, or we need to dispose of the idea of a second reading.
I would waive the second reading and third reading if that is based on Assistant County Attorney's suggestion. I don't think it's necessary.
That's an amendment to your motion.
Yes.
Okay.
We would probably then have to vote on the amendment, I would have
thought. All right, so the first thing we're voting on is whether we're waiving the second and third reading and making this, in fact, our final reading. Further discussion on that one portion of this. Clinton?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Now we're dealing with the original motion with the amendment included. Further discussion, and that is adopting this with Planning and Zoning's proposed amendments included. Further discussion on that. Anything else, Paul?
No.
Clinton?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Ordinance 222 passes on final reading, and we will dispose of that matter now.
Great. Been a long time coming. Okay.
All right. Next, we're to additional items now, and we are to bid opening for box culvert replacement projects on 667th in Section 11 of Nevada's Township, and on 730th in Section 26 of Collins Township. Darren Moon, County Engineer. Hi, Darren.
Good morning.
Morning.
Okay, this is for, like you mentioned, two separate projects, but they'll be tied into one contract, so we'll be adding the two together for award basis. We have two bidders. The first one is Peterson Contractors out of Rhinebeck, Iowa. Bid bond is attached and signed. And starting at the top under Peterson Contractors for the Collins 26 project, total amount of $62,267.51, 62267.51. For the second project, for Peterson Contractors, $111,440.58, 111,440.58 for the Nevada 11 project.
Underestimate.
Tyler will total these up after we let him, but let's move on to the second one. The second bid is Rognus Brothers Excavating out of Lake Mills, Iowa. Bid bond is attached and signed. So for the Collins 26 project under Rognus, project total of $49,213.88, 49213.88. And for the Nevada 11 project under Rognus, total amount of $85,413.17, 85413.17. Tyler will double-check these numbers, but the apparent low bidder will be Rognus, but since there's just two bidders, you'll be able to get those added up by the end and make sure there's no errors by the end of the board meeting where we can award the contract.
Super. Have we used Rognus before?
We have not. They've bid before but never been awarded.
Okay. And one more question, Darren, before we let you go. I got stopped last night and asked, we're doing a culvert project or up near Story City, just south of Story City?
Correct.
What kind of time frame is on that? It was just a simple question of how long he had to drive 4 miles out of his way.
They were supposed to start yesterday, but they delayed that, right? So that, did they start today? Do you know?
I know they're still working
on the south. Okay. They were supposed to start yesterday, but the rain's delaying the start, so I don't know if they have the road closed yet. I don't think they do. But when they do start, I'd probably say 2 weeks.
I told him something similar, and I just wanted to make sure I wasn't way off base. Thanks. Tyler, we'll look for you at the end of the meeting.
Right.
Next item is consideration of purchase of ID badge equipment from Strauss Security Solutions for $7,334.80. Cal Pearson, our facilities director. Hi, Cal.
Good morning.
Morning.
And Terry. Hi, Terry. Thanks for joining us today.
I was asked to gather pricing and information about ID badges that would adapt to our present keyless entry system. I contacted Jim Wicker, our Strauss security system representative, which is who we purchased our keyless system from. And the equipment listed in the packet that you all should have is what he recommended. The equipment in the quote is what he said would work with our system. I've also got some pricing on some other accessories that we'll probably need to have with the badging system. I also presented the equipment info to the IT staff for their review, and they did not have any issues of compatibility with our IT equipment. And as far as a camera for the system, they basically said any digital camera would work. Terry and I looked through and picked out a webcam that we thought would work to hook up to her PC, and the printer would also be hooked up to her PC, so there would be no other links into that system besides her using it. So as far as the pricing goes, we had the quote from Jim, and then like I say, there's some accessories here that we don't necessarily have to buy all at once. We can buy as we go. We just wanted to get a general idea what kind of money we may be spending on this to get started. And then after that, we're looking at $1,000 a year for additional equipment and maintenance of the system. My other suggestion is if the board does decide to go with this system, that presently CLP does their own fob and key issuing. I'd like to see facilities management take over those duties so that we've combined all of that into one location and we wouldn't have to duplicate equipment for them to take photos with for the ID badges. And I talked to Ron Christensen about this last week, and he was in agreement with that also. So other than that, if you have any questions, I'll try to answer for you.
Yeah, Cal, just so I'm clear, we're talking about this replacing the little gray fobs that we currently have that allow us access into whatever portions of the building we're supposed to have access into. That's first, correct?
Yes.
And then the second thing is each elected official would still have purview over their own staff as to whether they use the badge IDs or they continue with the gray fobs.
Yeah, both will continue to work with the system, and that's some issues that are going to have to be worked out as who actually switches over and the information that's going to be put on the badge. And there's a lot of details to work out if you decide to go with this system.
Over time, it may be something that people will get accustomed to and find it to be more convenient to have one system in place. The most important thing here is that in the transition, that we don't see this as really being a disadvantage, basically, or something very difficult to match our current system or whatever hardware or software that we have to purchase for this to take place. But I think it gets us closer to our overall goal of security countywide, because everybody is under the same system. We have identification of all of the employees that are utilizing the facilities. So I think it's a positive step in the right direction, Mr. Chair. And my only question really comes back to, since we know that this was not a budgeted item in this present time, so have we figured or been able to identify the approximate cost and where this will come from currently out of this FY? Because I assume we want this paid for this FY. Is that correct? And or is it something that for next FY?
Well, I think we could split this quote among my present budgets and possibly move on it with the monies we're working with now.
For this
well,
year.
Yeah.
Year.
I guess
year.
Part of my my question is, again, more in line with making sure that we can kind of identify, you know, where the expenditures are going to come. And even if, you know, we have to work with your department or whatever, assuming we don't go over that bottom line.
Right.
But it's, again, knowing, and I think it's appropriate that it comes through facilities, but mm-hmm. I didn't know whether this would cause you to be slightly over at the end of the fiscal year or not, and that's why I raised that question.
I think we'll be okay, Wayne.
Oh, okay.
Here. Yep.
Okay.
Cal, help me. What do the current little gray plastic fobs cost us right now?
They're $8 a piece.
So this is actually going to be cheaper in terms of per over time as we issue these things, we're going to be saving a couple dollars per issuance. Is that about right?
Probably, even with the ink and the cleaning cartridges that we'll need, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Paul, any questions?
I actually contacted Cal here, a month ago or so about this. And when, as we've been having our discussions about building security, And granted, it will be up to the purview of the individual elected officials whether they would choose to use these or not. However, I think that we need to really work hard to get every county employee, when they're on county property, if we're going to spend this money for this equipment, and if we issue them an ID badge, I think that badge needs to be displayed. I've had that comment made to me several times that, well, we have people coming in and out of the building, and or even back into certain offices. I mean, it's not uncommon for somebody that would come into the recorder's office that's familiar with that, come into the auditor's office to, you know, walk clear to the back of the office if they need to see somebody or conduct some business with somebody back there. And I think there's some concerns about, you know, whether or not that, you know, somebody should be back there, and if they are, who are they? And I think if somebody's wearing an ID card, they can be readily, you know, identified. It's not uncommon with 300 and some county employees that you know, nobody knows everybody that works here. So
sure.
I would, whether it needs to be a policy or whether it simply needs to be, you know, voluntary, I would certainly like to think that everybody would cooperate. I did have a conversation with Lieutenant Dodds at the sheriff's office. It would be, I think, the preference of the guys that are in uniform for the sheriff's office to maintain the gray fob, because most of the guys wear their keys on their belt, and a card could be cumbersome and get in the way of what they've got on their utility belt. But other than that, I would like to see everybody when they're here displaying their ID badge. So.
And so, question for you, Paul: how do you see it working for non-county staff that are housed in our buildings? And I'm thinking the Human Services building specifically. How do you see that working?
That's a good question. I think that's, you know, whether it's the DHS staff, they're issued the gray fobs. I think, you know, they're not necessarily a county employee, and whether that can, you know, something can be put on that badge that states that they're, I guess I haven't thought through that far enough to make that distinction, but.
Well, I think it seems appropriate that if they're a county employee and that the badge is identifying them as such, and if they're not a county employee and maybe just being for contract service or whatever, or utilizing it on a temporary basis, we figure out a way that, you know, those people either have to check in or what have you. I think, again, as we move forward, I mean, the climate that we're in today is totally different than we've ever faced before. So I think over in time, we're taking the steps that is necessary to bring about a more secure facility and a way to identify people in the right place for the conveyance of business. So I think that's something that can be worked out. And I would hope that as a board and in working with our legal team, that we could also work with other elected departments to recognize, you know, why this would be an advantage. I could see in the case of the deputies, because they're already in uniform, you know, they're easily identified. My question would be, what about some of the other inline office staff that may or may not be, and that could still be something that is done. But I think that can be done over time without any problem. But I like the concept at this point, and I think this is a good step for us to move with that.
Well, I would suggest that two things happen here. If we like this and support it, that we go ahead and authorize the purchase of this equipment and the supplies mentioned here. And then the second thing is I would suggest that we refer to Jessica Reynolds, our civil attorney, and Alyssa Wignall, our HR director, to really put together what kind of policy that we as supervisors can put in place and what kind of force that can have, especially dealing with county employees that are under the supervision of other elected officials. And don't need that today, but we would need to understand kind of where we're headed in this thing. Clearly, a large portion of the county works ultimately for us, and so I think we can put in any kind of policy in terms of what's expected of wearing a badge that we want, but I'd like a full report on that. So that's my suggestion to you guys, if you have anything further.
No, I think that's a good next step.
If not, I would sure entertain a motion to approve this.
I will second it.
Moved and seconded. Any further questions or conversation? Cal, do you have anything else to add to this?
No, I agree with the system. I think it'll be a benefit, and there's a lot of things I think down the future that may adapt to this type of system that we'll be able to utilize.
Well, Cal, I'm kind of glad that I've got a mustache, because I wouldn't want to be mixed up with Mike Cox, you know, since the two of us kind of have that,
real. I get you guys confused all the time, Wayne.
All the time.
We could probably Photoshop that in your ID badges.
All right. Hearing no further discussion, Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. It is approved. Let's go with it. Jessica and Alyssa, please put together something just explaining, giving us direction on what we can do with this. Okay? Next item on our agenda is consideration of a 5-year contract between Story County, Iowa, and Mediacom for internet services for the Central Iowa Drug Task Force at the rate of $119 per month with a one-time startup installation fee of $420, and it's listed under my name, which I'm not entirely sure how it ended up. I think an email came to
tell
me at one point.
It.
Yeah,
tell us all about it.
Barb, I'm going to ask that you come up and join Jessica Reynolds, since this is, even though it may not be an IT matter, we may have some questions on the IT. Jessica, I know I referred this to you when I saw the email and asked what kind of status Story County has with the Central Iowa Drug Task Force. I know that we're members of that. I'm just not sure that we're the contractual body for that.
Well, I am here to request additional time. Here's what's going on in my investigation of this matter. I need to review the fully executed original 2080 agreement to determine whether or not the Drug Task Force is its own legal entity and can contract, because if they can, then they can sign this agreement. The issue is locating that original agreement, which the auditor's office has a note that says Steve Owen has the original, so I am looking through his files. That's the former civil attorney in our office, to try and locate that. Once I get that document, I'd like to look at it, see if the task force has the ability to contract. If they do, this doesn't need to come to the county. If they don't, the next question becomes who should sign the contract. As you all know, I like to limit the county's signature on contracts when at all possible, because if there's a breach of contract, then we'd be the entity that would be potentially liable. And so I'm always trying to keep us out of things that we don't necessarily have to be in. So some of my questions would then, if that's the case, center around, is there an entity that we could piggyback on their internet for less money? This location is in Ames, the city of Ames. I'd like to talk with them about that possibility. I'd like to explore with Barb the possibility of can the county's internet encompass this and the task force pay us back, and would it cost us less than $119 a month for 5 years? So, or would it cost the task force less, I guess? So this is a long way of me saying that I need more time before I can fully give my opinion.
When the email came out, there was a 20E, I think, attached to it that was signed by Larry Larson.
It just wasn't signed by all the entities, and before I rely on a legal document, I want to make sure it's the final one that was executed by all the parties. So
that one.
I did. Okay. I just want to, I'm not willing to
go with an unsigned one. I want to make sure I find the fully executed one because things can be changed in between signatures, and I'd hate to rely on an inaccurate document when I'm reporting to you.
Sure. Barb, I may have had you come up here with no reason. Jessica, is a week enough time to do your exploration? So we could refer this to you with the direction that this be on next week's agenda for us to deal with.
Absolutely.
Right.
Do we need formal action to do that, or can that just be done?
You can just do that.
That can just be done.
Yeah, as chair, I'm going to refer it back to Jessica and say, bring this back to us next week.
Right.
Sounds good. I will do.
Okay.
Good. Barb, thanks for coming up. Appreciated your input. All right, next item is discussion and consideration of Resolution 1375 regarding notice of voluntary annexation from the City of Ames regarding the annexation of three parcels of land located in Section 16 of Washington Township, locally known as 2212 Oakwood Road. Leanne Harder.
As you just said, this is a voluntary annexation to the City of Ames. Before you have three separate resolutions, one outlining the Board of Supervisors' support for the proposed annexation, one outlining that you are not in support, and a third one that you could say you take no position. And I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Okay, now is this the one out near the church off of...
Right, on Oakwood Road. It's just immediately west of a little park there.
Okay, right. Are there, just based on most of these that come before us in terms of the voluntary annexation, it appears that this is more or less a notice of intent, unless we as an entity have strong objections to something. Have you received any feedback from local citizens in the area that's affected by this? I'm just looking for, are there potentially some areas that we need to be concerned about before we move forward?
I would venture guess that the majority of individuals don't realize this is still an unincorporated Story County. It's surrounded on three sides by the City of Ames.
I was about to say, it's almost, right. I was out there last night at Oakwood Road Church, which is in the City of Ames.
Right.
It's west of this piece of property. Wessex, those apartments are in the City of Ames, and they're east of this property.
The city boundary is the west edge of that park, and then it goes to the beginning of the residential development is where the city boundary starts again. To answer your question, no, Wayne, we have not received any comments from the public. And again, it is a voluntary annexation.
Right. Yeah.
All right. Pleasure of the board.
I would move consideration of Resolution 1375 as proposed in support of the voluntary annexation.
1375 is the one.
1375. Did I say 74?
You have three. They're all numbered 1375.
Yeah, and actually, two of them aren't numbered 1375. The one that I have 1375 is numbered is that we take no position.
They should all be 1375.
And then the others are just misnumbered, so we approve one of those. Now, Wayne, the only question I'm going to have as you make your motion, and I'm coming back to it since we clarified the way things are numbered, what is the traditional stance of this of the Board of Supervisors in Story County regarding annexation? It seems to me that generally we've taken no position for or against
things. It's only been, I would say 90% of the time it's been no position because we really don't have a whole lot to say about it. There have just been probably one or two incidents that I could recall that we actually did support the annexation. The fact that we take no position does not do anything at all. And I could amend my motion. Well, since it hadn't been seconded,
I just wanted to clarify.
It was a good point. I'm glad you brought
the level.
I'm glad you brought that up. I don't think this rate comes to the level that we need to really take an affirmative position.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then I'm looking for, since first motion died for lack of a second, I'm looking for a motion.
I'll make a motion that the board take no position on this Resolution 1370.
Yep. And I will second it.
All right. Motion and second. Further discussion. Toot.
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. We declare this resolution of the board taking no position on the annexation adopted and approved.
I will forward that once it's recorded on to the City of Ames.
Right.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you again for the clarification, too, as well. I think looking back over the time, it helps to refresh our mind.
I like consistency wherever possible. Thank you, Wayne. Let's see. That takes us to discussion and consideration of strategic plan for Story County, Iowa. And again, Leanne, if you wouldn't mind just synopsizing how we got here.
Sure. And I did share with the board this morning a copy of the report submitted by Jeff Schott with the Institute of Public Affairs with the University of Iowa. If you'll recall, at the beginning of the year, the Board of Supervisors submitted an application to ISAC, Iowa State Association Counties, for a pilot program that they identified to set up goal-setting sessions in several counties throughout Iowa. We were successful with that application, and as a result, Mr. Schott with IPA did come two times. The first one was earlier just to, this is what we're doing. And then the real heart and soul of the meetings with Story County was held on April 17th. Prior to that, questionnaires were sent out to department heads and elected officials with various survey questions. Those were then compiled forward to Mr. Schott. And then he used a series of facilitation tools at the April meeting to identify ongoing priorities and new plans and programs for Story County to consider. He did submit this then to Supervisor Sanders, who asked that maybe I pretty it up a little bit. Make it a little bit more simple and straightforward, so that just simply the ongoing priorities and then the new policies and programs be identified. And then Mr. Schott did recommend as well then action plan be developed to be acted on by the Board of Supervisors. So not only do you have the ongoing priorities and new plans, you have the key steps and benchmarks, you have the responsible parties, you have time frames. So before you is the draft strategic plan for fiscal years 2014-2015. Quite simply, you open it up in half, and those are the new priority projects, 1 through 4 tie. And then below that are the ongoing priorities. When you go open up the main area then, you have the activities again listed, the fiscal years in which the activities would occur, responsible departments, supporting departments, and then identified benchmarks and key steps. To identify those benchmarks and key steps in the applicable fiscal years, I then met over the past couple weeks with several department heads, elected officials, to discuss the project or priority, get some feel from their standpoint as a responsible department what the key steps would be. You could pick any of these, and we really discussed in depth what would be important to note as we go forward this process, that we've achieved that step and then build on that for the next one. Ideally, in 2 years, the Board of Supervisors in the position that you do this process again, looking at fiscal years 2016 and 2017, becomes a repetitive process. And then this is something that you use as a guiding document as you begin your budget discussions each year as well. And I could go into more detail. Is that what you wanted?
I think that was perfectly in. Right. And I'll just ask Wayne and Paul if they've each had an opportunity to see the draft version. Leanne, I'm really appreciative of what you've put together here. I did ask for her to take, you know, what is basically a black and white bullet point document and turn it into something that is a little more readable and usable, because for me, while I found this goal-setting session and ultimately our strategic plan that is coming out of that as being a really beneficial exercise for us to go through, and I'm so appreciative of the time that Jeff Schott spent and Leanne and her staff spent pulling this all together. If we don't use it, if we don't refer to it, if members of the public aren't aware of it, it really doesn't do a whole lot for us. And so I think it's important that ultimately, whether it's this document or some version thereof, I think it's important that we get down to a bite-sized piece of information that any of us or other elected officials or members of staff, when they're out in the community, can share with others, and we can try to let people understand kind of what we're trying to get done and how we're trying to get it done.
Well, Supervisor Sandler, yes, I took a look at that last night, and again, I come to the same conclusion. I was extremely impressed not only with the layout of the information that's contained in it, but I think it does clearly enhance not only information to the public about some of the priorities and goals that we have. And I would echo your comments to Leanne and staff and Jeff Schott and so forth. My additional question on that would be, Leanne, since the Iowa Association of Counties has worked and made this pilot program available, could I have a few copies if we adopt this to make available to ISAC and particularly Bill Peterson? I'm sure that I've tried to keep him abreast with this. And the second part of that question is, you know, at our various fall schools and different things, we like to bring topics to the rest of the statewide supervisors regarding some of the things. And I would ask you to give consideration to whether or not you would be willing to consider making some formal presentation that we could share with other supervisors. I do know Linn County and Johnson County are two other counties that have gone through some type of goal setting in the past. And we may want to consider how we want to look at that, but that doesn't necessarily have to happen this fall. But I think this is something that I'd like to really share more or less on a statewide basis, based on what we have accomplished. So.
And I forwarded this once the agenda was published or sent it to the agenda last week. I did forward it to Mr. Peterson, Mr. Schott as well, and did follow up and say once it's approved, I'll get you official copies.
Thank you.
If approved, I should say.
Very good.
The question I have is I assume that our task here today is would be to vote to adopt this plan or accept the plan. And with that, I struggle a little bit with number three, the advocate for the merger of the City of Ames and County Assessor's Office, and that being supporting departments or the responsible department to be the Board of Supervisors. It's a little misleading when the bullet point is the merger of the City Assessor and the County Assessor's Office. It is not a merger. It's either one, both. But there's no merger. It's going to be up to the City of Ames to decide whether or not they want to maintain their City Assessor's Office. And I don't see where it's my role as a Board of Supervisor member for the county to try to influence the City of Ames if they want to maintain their own Assessor's Office. Granted, they're spending tax dollars that if there was one Assessor's Office, they wouldn't necessarily be spending as many tax dollars, but I don't know that it's this board's role to advocate that we abolish, and that's exactly what has to happen, that the City Assessor's Office is abolished. And
because it would just be a Story County assessor then, but would serve all of Story County.
Right.
And, Paul, the only question I have is, in our role as supervisors, we are on both of those conference boards, and we each have one of us is on
right. The
mini board for both of those,
right.
And so I that's where I see our role as supervisors. I think you're 100% right. We don't get to decide this. It's City of Ames ultimately that's going to make this decision,
right?
But I think we do have a little input as far as where this thing is headed. But I think your point that what we're really advocating for is doing away, if in fact we're going down this road, doing away with the Ames assessor and moving to one Story County assessor.
Right.
Yeah.
Paul, you raise a good point. I guess I'm struggling a little bit. I like the strength of what it says. I mean, this is something that we've talked about a number of years, and going back historically, several years ago, when former Mayor Ted Tedesco was still there, they did come and asked about whether or not we wanted to take a look at this as a cost-saving method. And at that time, Assessor Wayne Schrigerath put together a proposal before we hired the current assessor, and I thought did an excellent job. Ultimately, the decision at that point in time was to continue with an assessor in the City of Ames. And I think part of it was due to the fact that Wayne was relatively new also to the county, had only been here a couple of years, two or three years. But I do think that it's certainly within our purview to raise the issue and kind of take a look at whether or not it's going to be more cost-effective and better for the taxpayers of Story County, since we are elected at large, to at least have them consider it. Now, if they decide that they want to maintain their own, I would have no problem with that. But I like the fact that I've recognized for a number of years that I believe that we could exist quite well with one assessor. You know, Polk County, the largest county in the state, basically has one assessor, but they have several deputies. So
I think there's only seven or eight cities in Iowa that have their own assessor.
Paul, would it increase your comfort level, and Leanne also toward you, would it dramatically change the new initiative if instead of saying advocate for merger of, if we said something along the lines of approach the city of Ames about the possibility of moving to one assessor for all of Story County?
That would be fine. My problem was the fact that it says merger, and it's not a merger.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an elimination.
And so I'm just asking about what I'm trying to do is, you know, these were clearly, when we went through the goal-setting session, these were clearly the initiatives that rose to the top. I don't think it was even close once we got beyond that, kind of that fifth one. I'm just trying to find a way to phrase it in the appropriate way, but still maintain that this was in fact one of these.
If our goal is to move towards one assessor's office in the county, I'm fine with that. And the
it board. Was never intended to be one assessor's office. It was to be there would still be an office in Ames because that is the largest jurisdiction. However, the assessor, if you had one assessor, would spend time in both locations and alternating bases as the earlier proposal. Maybe 2 days a week here, 3 days there, and then alternate from time to time. You're overseeing staff. So basically what you're doing is you are merging, you know, the office from one state, and you're just eliminating the title of the assessor. But again, I think it's a question of semantics, and I could be comfortable either way with that.
I think ultimately it's going to be up to the assessor. If the city decides that they want to eliminate the city assessor's office and we have a county assessor, and whoever that assessor is, I think he's going to set up and run his office the way he sees fit,
as allowed by the conference board that he reports.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
So.
Which, I mean, let's just be clear for the record, the conference board is made up of, the Board of Supervisors has one vote for the entirety. All the cities, municipalities within that jurisdiction. So right now, Ames is the lone city on the Ames assessor conference board. But now they would roll into where Ames would have one 15th of a vote with every other city in the county,
right,
and then every school system, which I think that Gilbert and United Community and Ames are the three that roll into that one school vote. And so you're talking about really combining back to one conference board who hires one assessor who then runs it however they see fit.
Right.
The question is, what is our role as a member having one vote on that? I mean, I think we all agree that there is some potential for savings of tax dollars. Those aren't Story County tax dollars. They aren't the City of Ames tax dollars, but they're still tax dollars coming from the people of Story County and specifically the City of Ames. So what's our role in that, and how does it fit into our strategic plan?
That's a good question, and I know that the mini board that I'm on for the county assessor, we've had that conversation. Mm-hmm. And I mean, and I think that's, you know, that's the extent that the mini board can do. We've had the conversation, and the thought is that, yes, we need to have just one assessor's office in the county. So,
And I'm on the mini board for Ames, and we have not formally had that conversation. We have individuals among us have individually have privately had that conversation. But what I think this does, one of the reasons that I'm such a fan of having it on our strategic plan. First of all, it's when we had the full group here and did this, it's one of the things that rose to the top. But secondly, this is how something like this finally gets discussed openly and publicly.
Right, that's correct.
And so I'm a big fan of having something on there. I really don't care what the verbiage is that gets it on there. And I want it to be clear and accurate. And so whatever that is would make sense to me.
I'm just uncomfortable with the language that it's a merger. Because I can't go out and advocate for a merger when, in effect, it's not. It's an elimination of the city assessor's office.
Not the office, but the city assessor. The title of the assessor.
Well,
the office
no, it's
will
the
be
city
made
assessor's there. Office. And if the county assessor decides to open up an office in Ames or is directed by his conference board to have an office in Ames, and that's
technically I think you're correct.
How about if we just made it something simple like number three would be advocate for Story County moving to one assessor for the whole county?
I'm fine with
right,
that.
Yeah.
I'm comfortable with that.
Right.
Leanne, does
yeah.
that dramatically change the intent of what came out of our goal-setting session?
I don't believe so. I think that if the verbiage that you just wrote when we went through the facilitated exercise, that way yielded the same result.
Right.
I think
right.
the intent was to have one assessor's office.
Right.
One assessor's office. And let's make sure we get...
And I think the important, again, is... This initiates the discussion. And I think we, as a member of that body, you know, have the obligation, if we believe that that would be something that ought to be at least considered, we need to formally take action to bring that as a part of a discussion or for consideration.
Which, absolutely. And I just want to underscore one of the first points that Paul made. Ultimately, this is not our decision. I mean, we get one-third of the decision-making power on two different bodies of making this happen. But really, it's going to come down to the city of Ames and where they decide they need to be.
Correct.
And so all we can really do in this case is we can advocate that, hey, this makes sure. sense. We can bring up the discussion. But then, to me, we've met the goal of our strategic plan. Okay?
And I think, and maybe I'm wrong, and I should probably just stop talking right now. But even if the conference board decides that we need to move to one assessor's office, it's ultimately the city's choice.
Oh yes, it's always going to be the city's choice.
Right.
They have the statute to be able to determine that. Right. Right.
That good. So I am now looking for a motion. Let's see. A motion to adopt our strategic plan with the amendment of changing number three.
Yeah.
Leanne, you want to read that, what you have back to us, so that we know what we're voting on?
Advocate for Story County moving to one assessor for the entire story, for the entire county.
So that's where we are.
Track it.
Further discussion.
No, I think the discussion is really germane to the an excellent thought process, Paul, bringing that to our attention, and I think it's very helpful that we have that understanding.
Yeah, if we wanted to make this discussion public, we just did. So there you go. If that was the goal accomplished. Leanne, the only other thing I would ask is I would really like to see if we could take this design and maybe get four panels done large that can hang right there on that wall, where every time we're in this room, if this is what's important to us, if this is what we really want to be focused on, that we're looking at it right there all the time.
I can do that. Also, I failed to mention it's designs once it's placed online under each initiative under the left, it'll take you to county. If you look at the full bridge maintenance plan, it'll take it to the engineer's website. Ultimately, that's our goal by July 1st, have that done. I did want to, I'll wait till your vote.
Okay. Well, no, if you want to say it, just do it now before we vote.
Well, I just wanted to, I didn't know if this was an appropriate time or not for the board to have a discussion. How do you ensure ongoing evaluation, tracking success of the plan? Basically, who is the project manager to make sure that the board's benchmarks are being celebrated, or if modifications need to occur to it because of something with a mental health redesign?
Yeah, and I think you're right. I think that's a conversation for a later time. As I see it, that rests with the board, and the board may, as the board does from time to time, assign that to one of their staff members.
Right.
Hi, Leanne.
Right. Yeah.
Yep. All right.
I agree.
Further discussion?
Yep.
Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Strategic plan is adopted. Thank you, Leanne.
Good. And right, keep going.
Absolutely. Consideration of an RFP to invite prospective vendors to submit a proposal to provide a hosted voice over internet protocol telephone solution to Story County, Iowa. Barb, this time you actually get to come up and do something. Sorry I had you come up last time.
I actually get to talk. Do we want to wait for Wayne?
I'd say go ahead and get started. He'll be back in just a minute.
I prepared this RFP for the new phone system that was approved in our budget talks for FY 2014. It is 17 pages long, but I think I've included several pages of what we expect from the new system, not only here but at the hosted facility. I did spend a couple paragraphs just telling a little bit about Story County so that the prospective vendor would have an idea of what the enterprise was like, how many locations, and then I did include a table with our different locations that will be served by the phone system as well as the connectivity to those current locations. There may be some questions as to whether this will work for all of our conservation in particular just because of their location. Planning this out, I'm looking at possibly a September implementation. We would like to port all of the current phone numbers to the new system. That only makes sense, but sometimes that can take up to 90 days. So that will probably be our longest lead item. We will tentatively start user training toward the end of September.
Okay.
Any questions?
Sounds to me like it all starts with this RFP. Remind me what we put in the budget for next year to be able to pay for this.
Well, we had originally looked at hosted versus leased. It seemed that with technology, the turnover time is 3 to 5 years for hardware. It didn't make sense for us to purchase everything. So we looked at tentatively, I thought it was $180,000 to $200,000 for this system. Okay. Versus, I had quotes up to $350,000 for a purchased system. So it is a cost savings that's spread out.
Okay, and for the record, tell me why our current phone system needs to be replaced.
Our phone system was installed in 1998. There are a lot of limitations on that. There's a lot of long distance savings we can realize. We can also realize efficiency. The system, being that old, is no longer reliable, and we would like to use this opportunity also to incorporate DHS into the new system, who has the same type system we have, and they have eliminated their maintenance, so they're kind of skating on thin ice. But with the new system, it will tie in with our current network. So we'll be able to get rid of some PRIs, which are dedicated phone lines, and then run everything over our network, Cat 5, Cat 6 lines, and our fiber lines. So it just makes sense to go this route.
Does this help enhance security of our buildings?
It does not enhance security. However, there are add-ons that we can purchase to go hand-in-hand with the system that will give us, for instance, the panic button capability that the Treasurer's Office is requesting. It will also provide something we don't have currently, which is a disaster recovery situation. If this is a hosted solution, one of the buildings is wiped away by a tornado, whatever, we can easily, from home, configure the numbers where they will ring. They'll still receive calls. It's just where we want to direct it. So there's a lot more flexibility with our phone system. traveling from office to office. You can log into any phone, and it's as if you were at your own desk. So there's a lot of flexibility with this that we don't currently have.
So we could get the panic button. Would we have an intercom feature, which we don't currently have?
We will have a paging feature, and that can be configured via entire county or in paging zones that we set up.
I think it'll give department heads and elected officials more, I don't know, flexibility or even oversight as far as incoming and outgoing calls. Currently, I think all we have is just a list of long distance charges that we get, but this will have the capability of showing the incoming and outgoing calls on it.
We do have a third party software that we use to track long distance, which it picks up all of the calls. So this will also add no additional cost to have that feature. I guess I should say, depending on the solution that's offered to us. Most of them do.
Okay.
If I want to get my voicemail, am I going to have to push less than 8 or 9 buttons, whatever?
The menu will be a lot simpler, a lot more intuitive. There'll be a lot more information on the viewing screen so that you know where you're at within the menu. It will tell you what to do to get out of that menu. I know the current system... So I had to listen to a voicemail, I think was 3 minutes long once, and I couldn't figure out how to get out of it. Started pushing buttons, finally hit star twice, and it got me out of that. But these are just things, it's a time waster when you try to figure out how to use something that's almost 20 years old.
Yep, so I'm hearing current phone system is obsolete.
Yes.
While it may not completely address our security issues, it does have some features that we can put on it that will help with the panic button and the intercom system.
Yes.
And items like that. And it may lend itself to incorporating with other security measures that we seem to be interested in right now.
It seems to go hand in hand with our current trend toward enhanced security, yes.
Okay. Thank you. Other questions for Barb? Wayne, anything else? All right, so we need approval to send out the RFP.
So move.
Second. Got a motion and a second. Further questions or conversation?
No.
Clinton?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Please send the RFP out.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next item is discussion of settlement agreement and release in Story County versus the Underground Company. And this is Jessica, and I'm betting Mike Cox. Mike, do you want to come up? You may not have to say anything. This may be your Barb exercise of the morning, but since it deals with something under your purview. Oh, and I should add that this is also Resolution 1376, consideration thereof.
Well, just a little background. On April 5th, 2013, the Story County Attorney's Office filed suit in Story County District Court against the Underground Company Limited. This was on behalf of both the county and the Story County Conservation Board. Director Mike Cox has worked hand-in-hand with me in getting this filed quickly and through our settlement discussions that have resulted after filing that. I wanted to publicly commend Mike for all of his extremely hard work in this matter. He provided me information at a moment's notice, which happened quite often, and immersed himself in this project. He was not yet working for the county in 2008 when the system was installed, and every time I talked to him, you wouldn't have known that, because he completely immersed himself in the project, knew everything about the project, and I wanted to publicly thank him for that. The reason I'm here before you today is that we have received a settlement offer from the Underground Company. They are offering to settle the lawsuit for $54,870.50. To the Conservation Board on Friday did approve that settlement. And to go forward with the settlement of the lawsuit, we will need the approval of this board as well. Just to let you know what that would mean, Mr. Cox has a estimate to repair the current system that would be $44,530. This would also cover the $2,302 that the Conservation Department has expended to repair the system to date, and it would compensate the county for the water loss at an amount of $8,038.50. After working this case, I would recommend the approval of the settlement in this matter. Any questions?
No, I would just again echo the sentiment that you expressed to Mike for his leadership and working with this and sitting on the Conservation Board as a non-voting member. I'm very much familiar with the problems and the challenges that we've had over a number of years, and I think this is an excellent resolution. And Mr. Chair, I would vote that we approve the settlement agreement as submitted by resolution number 1376.
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion? Any other questions? Clinton?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Settlement approved by the Board of Supervisors.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's see. No agency reports, departmental reports. We're going to hold Shirley Faircloth for next week, reporting to us on juvenile court. Liaison assignments and committee meeting updates. Wayne?
A pass.
Paul? None for me as well. Other reports, discussion and update on Story County bridges, County Engineer Darren Moon.
Okay, I just want to start out by pointing out this is just for informational and discussion purposes. The board had asked that we start trying to come up with some way to prioritize bridges for possible closure. So this is kind of a continuation of that discussion, and I hope to give you some more information that might help you, give me some guidance on how to formulate that. Let me start out first. Last week, we had a bridge audit. This is the first time Story County's ever been audited by the DOT. It's just a totally random process by the DOT. To help you understand the process a little bit better, the federal government, they oversee the bridge inspection program. And it's their requirements we're trying to meet. And as far as the federal government's concerned, the DOT is responsible for inspecting all the bridges in the state. Iowa has chosen to let the counties inspect them, and that is fine. We just soon have as much local control as we can. But so in a way, the feds are auditing the state, and the state's auditing the county, so the state's essentially helping us to meet their requirements. So the audit went fine. I actually commented it's probably one of the better audits they've had, so we've had no issues there. But one of the things, part of the audit I wanted to point out again, we've discussed this a little in the past. Some of the recent federal requirements have changed, in particular to scour. Scour is when you get soil and sediment washed out under bridges and abutments and around piers. That can cause some safety issues. We had to come up with a plan on how we're going to address the different levels of bridges we have in the county. It's been a moving target because the fed rules keep changing. We're used to that, but I think we've come up with a better plan is the end result, which is good. But this is, it's a little hard to read here, but in essence, we have different levels out there, and this happens to be the low-risk group for scour. And there's a table on the bottom that shows if this is, happens to be the 50-year rainfall event. And this is what a 50-year rainfall event is in Story County. In 12-hour period, 5 inches of rain. We don't get that very often. But what that's going to do is trigger some events. This plan of action is what it's called, and there's different plans of action. The number of bridges we had to do is 2 pages long. This is just the first page, but what I want to point out, the yellow and green boxes over here are the bridges that have the plans of action, and they either say 25 or 50-year storm is when those plans kick in. The thing we really improve with this latest plan is you see one of them there says monitor about halfway down on the far right. That bridge we actually have to close when we get that event. All the rest of these are just post-inspection. That means after the rain event, we can leave the bridge open. and then just inspect it after the fact. This map shows all those bridges, and if you can recall the prior plan to about 2 years ago, essentially all these dots down here had to be closed, even in a 25-year event, especially down by Huxley. We were closing off whole neighborhoods. Nobody could get to their homes, and so we had to point out to the feds that just isn't going to work. That's nearly impossible. So the orange dots are bridges that need to be monitored in 25-year storms, and the yellow are the 50-year storms have to be monitored. But we're down to just two bridges that need to be closed. One is right here, and that's a gravel road. It wouldn't be a big issue to close that one. And the other one's still down by Huxley is this bridge right here. It's not real heavily traveled, but so we still have two we have to close with certain rain events, but it's much improved over what we had 2 years ago for a plan. Another reason we had dropped some of those off from the closure list is we did a lot of riprap projects, and that can also take bridges off the closure list. So some of it was based on our work. Let me move on to a little bit of actual bridge data that we actually have. This is difficult to see again. This is what we call the SINA sheet. This is all the inspection data. There's all kinds of code items in the front, and this is what gets filled out each time the bridge gets inspected. On the upper right corner here, I want to point out this happens to be the SINA sheet for that Hickory Grove Bridge that we currently have closed. There's an official and an unofficial up here, and the SR stands for sufficiency rating. Each bridge has a sufficiency rating, and I'll get into a little bit more of what that means. And then right of that is the SDFO, which is structurally deficient or functionally obsolete. You can see currently that bridge we have closed has a sufficiency rating of 57.7. If it's over 50, we can't use federal aid funds to replace it. You can see the unofficial means what we're proposing to the feds is drop that way down to 33. That will now make that bridge eligible for federal funds. And also has to be structurally deficient or functionally obsolete, and it's proposed to be that. Zoom in a little bit further so you can kind of see all these codes. We have a section on structure and materials, the geometric data, load ratings, the appraisal, and then up further is the actual condition ratings. All those get plugged into this program. This is a new program called SIMS the DOT has come up with. It's not very popular with counties because it's very unuser friendly. But we get a lot of data plugged into this every two years. This is just one sheet that shows that Hickory Grove Bridge again. This is a substructure rating tab. I'm not going to spend too much time on that, but in the end, all that data you can plug in. I get questions a lot of time from the media on what's sufficiency rating mean. The spreadsheet is what sufficiency rating means. It's hard to define. Each code is taken out of that bridge inspection form and plugged into the spreadsheet, and it comes up with in the end, a number of 50. And each one of these even have spreadsheets behind them, so there's a lot of calculations that go into that sufficiency rating number. But this pie chart kind of gives a little better explanation. About 55% is based on structural adequacy and safety. About serviceability and functionally obsolescence is about 30%. And that's just the characteristics of the bridge. How wide is it when it was originally built? So it's not really a condition. It's just functionally how good is it. 15% over here is essentiality for public use. That number does not change when it comes to Story County bridges. It's pretty much a constant. The reason for that, that's right in this section here. You see 14.9 points. To change that even a tenth of a point, you pretty much have to have a bridge with 10,000 vehicles a day and have a 10-mile detour. Story County doesn't have anything like that. So that number just doesn't change with the federal definition. How the sufficiency rating and other numbers are used, that determines how they're eligible. As I mentioned, this says 80 at the top. It has to be sufficiency rating under 80, that's to use to rehab the bridge. It has to be 50 or less to actually replace a bridge with federal funds. And what does structurally deficient or functionally obsolete mean? That's also coming out of those codes that were plugged in. They have to be under 4 for certain numbers for the condition side, and then the function side's below. That has to be under a 3 coded for that. So just to give you an idea, we have a lot of data for those bridges. It's how we're going to use that to come up. And then this is, again, this is how the state distributes the federal aid money to counties. 1/3 is based on our road use tax formula, and then we have 2/3 is based on, again, those numbers. Structurally deficient bridges, the square footage. So that's used in how much money we get to. Now here's where we take it one step further in kind of how Iowa starts to rank our bridges rather than sufficiency rating. How this form came about, the state sets aside $2 million each year. They call it the State Bridge Fund that the counties compete for, and they use a ranking system. The first sufficiency rating is used in that ranking system. That's the first section at the top. They use the ADT. They use the bypass and detour length. Bridge posting, the bridge length, and then a cost-to-vehicle ratio to see that's how much the estimated cost divided by the traffic to see if you're getting the most bang for your buck out of that money. I use a similar chart when I rank our bridges and have candidates for the five-year program. The only section I would point out that we probably would not use is this bridge length. A longer bridge gets more points. That's from a state perspective. They want to help counties that have these really long bridges that they cannot afford to replace. That's really what this fund does. That's not how we would necessarily rank our bridges in the county. So we might flip-flop that or take that section out completely if we're looking at ranking ours in a similar manner. But in the end, this is how you rank bridges for replacement. When we start talking about ranking bridges for closure, it's a whole different topic, and much more difficult to do. I wanted to point out I have a spreadsheet with all that data in it. I can sort and do anything I need to. This one's sorted by sufficiency rating in this column, and you about the top 5 or 10 bridges we've already replaced or they're in our program, so that follows pretty closely. I sorted again for that statewide ranking points. Those are way over here on the right. The top bridge is 78 points, and that's the Skunk River Bridge, Peterson Pit. That's already been replaced 2 years ago, but it hasn't made it through the bridge inspection cycle again, is why it's still on there. But beyond that, it drops way off down to 66, and to get those state funds, you have to be up in the 80s and 90 points. And what hurts us is the detour. We just don't have the detour links to ever really compete for those funds. But I want to point out we have a lot of data. We can rank this any way we want. But this will get us – I use this all the time to figure out the bridges we want in our program. But like I said, when it comes to ranking for closure, it's a whole different discussion. And these are some of those factors I came up with on why it's difficult to rank for closure. First and foremost, I think most important is how long will that structure stay in the current condition it's in? That's purely a judgment call. You have concrete bridges out there that could last a long time. Just from a feel, you can judge how long they'll last. But this Hickory Grove Bridge, that's been on the top of my list every five-year program discussion with the board previous years That was a very big concern of mine because I didn't think it would last. It's a wood bridge. It's getting beat up constantly by ice and debris. And judgment call on that one. The second one, is there development in the area? And is it a route to a co-op? It's kind of a yes or no question. It's hard to really rank things on that or put a point structure to it. Does the bridge carry ag equipment? Is a load posting acceptable? If you don't have ag equipment, a lot of times you could have a posted bridge, and it really doesn't affect that many people. That's something we'd have to take into account. Number four is probably the only one on the list that you could rank, have a point structure for. Is it on the federal aid? Is it eligible, and is it on the farm to market route? We have all that data, so we could use that as a ranking factor. Anything under 25 ADT is never eligible for federal aid funds. Just reiterate that. Are there landlocking issues? A lot of bridges out there that would landlock certain parcels, and we can't be doing that. Is it in a flood-prone area? Is the road subject to overtopping? And I'm going to point this one out on... I'm going to talk a little bit more about the Hickory Grove Bridge. We did some more design on that to see what we really need to replace that bridge. And that is one of those areas that we get overtopped a lot, and it makes it much more difficult to get a bridge in there. And we have other areas in the county, Squaw Creek and Isaac Walton Bridge is a few that they're so low. To put a new bridge in there, Isaac Walton in particular, it would have taken 400 or 500 foot long bridge in a low traveled area. So that one's at the top of my list for closure because it affects very few people and there's a route each way to get out. But the replacement bridge would be huge, basically because it's in that flood-prone and very low area. Number seven, every site is unique. You could have one vehicle per day, but it's a house access. We have those out there, so it's a very high priority. And then you have 80 vehicle per day bridge that maybe isn't that important at all. You could go around in a half a mile. So every site's unique. You can't just look at the ADT when you're ranking for closure. Mm-hmm. And you don't really know those details till you hold some sort of public hearing. And like as soon as we closed that Hickory Grove Bridge, I had all kinds of information flowing in I didn't know about before we closed it. And that's real helpful information to have when you have to make that decision on closure. And lastly, we're ranking these bridges based on funding availability. The reason for that, it's essentially never economical to close a bridge. Here's a study that was just done last year. I found doing some web research. Kansas did a study last year to see if it was ever economical to close a rural bridge. In a nutshell, this is what they came up with. A chart showing these are all when it makes more sense to replace the bridge, and this is where you could possibly close it. In the Story County case, we really don't have anything over a 4 or a 5 mile detour length. So you come across at 4 or 5, which would be our worst bridge, and you go down 2 cars per day is all you need on that bridge to make it justifiable. What they did is plug in a cost per mile. I think it was 60 cents per mile for cars and $1 a mile for semis. And then they put a lifespan on the bridge and an average cost for bridge. But this is what they came up with. So we're never really looking at how economical it'll be. It's what funding source do we have and how far can they go rather than is it economical to close a bridge. Unfortunately, we're to that point. And I found a couple other studies online. 20 years ago, those studies were pointing out exactly the situation we were going to be in today in the rural areas where policy is made by urban areas. They don't really care about that rural bridge out there. So as you see, getting that road use tax increase is darn near impossible these days. But yet, it makes economical sense to replace that bridge. And Darren, that's why we're struggling.
Why is it that you never hear anyone talk about safety and potential accidents that could be life-threatening as primary reasons for making some of these decisions? When you go back and think about the bridge collapse in Minnesota and so forth, you know, using that as an example, it just seems like all of the statistics and everything that we talk about the economical impact to moving farm equipment or, you know, transportation to and from, but we rarely talk about the potential loss of life of a vehicle going off of a bridge, if that bridge collapsed or something. Is there a reason that those type of statistics are not factored in?
No, but fortunately we don't have a lot of loss of life when it comes to bridges because we do inspect them right. So frequently. And when the one in Minneapolis happened, that really raised awareness on the safety. And then it was a hot topic there for 5 years, but it's starting to fade again, and it just gets back to even the Fed, they're all aware there's a problem there, but to get the money to fund the stuff takes a fuel tax increase on the federal level too, and they can't, it just doesn't get the votes.
And so even though you project that the lifespan of a particular bridge with continual traffic going across it or farm implement could further deteriorate that over time, it's pretty difficult to pinpoint exactly when that time would actually take place. And so you have to factor in all of these formula ideas in terms of what is the best time to either replace a bridge or close it and have people go to alternate routes, I suppose.
Yeah, and that's why we're out there constantly load posting our bridges to make them safe. They might not be as safe as they could be, but luckily we don't have a lot of accidents because we're constantly posting them for load and trying to keep them safe as we can. But I want to point out we are doing things as far as maintenance and repairs on bridges too. I don't want that to be lost in our discussion. I put together our list of these are the contract repairs we've done since about I started here in 98, right about when we started this program. This is a list of 50 bridges, mostly wood bridges, we've actually repaired by contract. And each one of those repairs will get another 20, 30 years of life out of those bridges. And then we even do bridge deck overlays. We put riprap under bridges to keep things going. And we do bridges in-house. Here's a picture of one where we do the stringer repairs. We have numerous bad stringers. You can see the darker ones here, the ones we replace. But we don't have the cranes to do the piling repairs. So the only way we can do this work is to completely take the deck off, which is a little time-consuming. But sometimes it's worth it on our shorter bridges to keep them in repair. So we do have a maintenance program, and every time we get that biannual bridge inspection report, we go through it and to see prioritize what we need to do for repairs too. Lastly, I wanted to touch on the Hickory Grove Bridge. I mentioned earlier we did actually go out and do some more work on this to see what would actually be needed if we wanted to replace this. So we surveyed it, did hydraulic design on it already. We kind of dropped a bridge in here to show you what it would take. There's a couple reasons why this bridge. I was hoping to come back and say, hey, we're going to have some cost savings here. We have options of going down to a 24-foot wide bridge. We don't do that very often. The only one I can think of we did was 265th over the Skunk. Since it was so long, we narrowed it up to 24-foot wide, which saves money. This would save about $100,000 if we went with the 24 instead of our normal 30-foot wide bridge. We'd probably need a little input from Hertz on that, if that would be adequate for their widths of their equipment. But unfortunately, with the skew, we have a 45-degree skew here. That's the angle between the road and the stream. When you have a 45, that's the max you can go. That really lengthens out your bridge by about 50%. You go, in the end, we're looking at about a 175-foot bridge here. You go downstream 5 miles, we're currently designing Indian Creek 9 bridge over the same stream downstream, and it's only 150 foot because it's going straight across. Other issue is this bridge is in a low area, like I mentioned before. Here's some historical photos. This is to the west. That's a long distance it washed out the road west of the bridge. Then you look back east towards Hickory Grove Park up here. This is actual pavement it tore out. And that's 5 foot higher than the bridge's elevation, and it was moving water since it tore out the pavement, so you can see how fast that water was moving over the road. And it actually went over this bridge. I can't believe we kept our handrails without knocking them off, but the water was way over the bridge and took all of our rock and matting off the bridge. So in the end, our preliminary design shows this line right here is the existing road elevation and the existing bridge right here. We essentially have to raise that 8 to 10 feet to get that bridge in there. This blue line is the Q50 storm. That's how we have to design this. You have to have 3 foot of freeboard over that 50-year storm to get to the bottom of the structure. This is where that intersection is. Right now, this bridge is about 5 foot below it, but in the end, it would be about 5 foot higher. So when you stand out that intersection and look at raising that bridge 10 feet, it's quite a bit. unfortunately. So that lengthens out the bridge when you raise it up. So like I said, we're talking 175-foot bridge. You're still in that $450,000 to $500,000 range. And we're the max you can go on a slab bridge, this is a little more economical, is 150 feet for our standards. And that's what we're using down Indian Creek 9. We're able to barely squeeze that 150-foot slab in there. This would take a beam bridge. It's about $140 a square foot compared to $100 a square foot for the slab. So that's going to raise the cost of this too, unfortunately. But I was hoping to come back and say we could get by with a little less money, but we're not going to be able to. But
any thought given to turning the road so that we're not crossing the stream at a 45-degree angle? I don't know who owns the property all around there, but it seems to me if you just came off that intersection in a different spot and then ran straight across and then curved back to get back on the straight road.
We haven't looked at it in detail yet, but I have been thinking about it. One of the issues is, one, the land costs are so high right now, we'd have to buy a considerable amount of ground. And to use federal aid money to do this, you'd have to follow the federal curve, a horizontal curve alignment. It takes an S-curve, kind of like we have out at Peterson Pit Bridge. And with this intersection here, I don't know if we can get it started in time.
Yeah, I'm saying you would have to move that intersection.
Okay.
Or you'd have to move that intersection, as I'm looking at it, probably, I assume that down is south, probably south.
And cost-wise, with the land values and moving all that stuff, I don't think you'd come out ahead. And in the end, you'd rather have a straight road. So if it's somewhat similar cost, you'd rather have a straight road anyway. So, yeah, but if we got into the replacement, we'd look into that in more detail. Well, I wanted to give you an update on that because it's going to be something we're going to have to make some decisions on before too long.
When do we find out if our recommendation, you said you're talking about trying to change the federal score on it, reducing it from 50-something down to 33, it seems like?
Correct.
Tell me about that. When do we find out on that?
That I need to find out more on. We've never had one that we need an answer on quickly, so I don't know how long that takes. I need to find out more on that.
But if it were to drop below 50, then all of a sudden it qualifies for potentially some federal funds that it doesn't currently qualify for.
Yep. I don't think there's any question it's going to qualify. It's just a matter of how long it takes them for them to approve, and I would think that would be at least within the year.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which the soonest, even if they approved it, I mean, the soonest we could get something like this done, we're in 2015 anyway, aren't we?
Yeah.
Okay.
In the end, I show you this every five-year construction program discussion on our balances, and it's hard to see, but January 15, that year, our balance on bridge funds is over here, and it's in 80,000, so we're pretty low. We're at the point with that Hickory Grove Bridge where we could fund it, but it could affect the bridge down the road. You just don't know at this point. We're not at the point where we couldn't fund the bridge. I want to point that out. But we're at the point where it could really affect the bridge down the road. So we're getting closer and closer every year to that point where we actually can't fund a bridge, but we're not there yet.
Tell me roughly, if you can, Darren, and I didn't ask you to bring this ahead of time, so if this is just outside the realm, generally, on average, what do we get for bridges in federal funding, state funding, and what kind of county dollars of your budget that we allocate to you goes into bridges? Do you have any guess?
Well, bridge replacement, like I mentioned, you give us $80,000 a year for those maintenance type of repairs we do.
Okay.
And above that, for replacement, we get $350,000 in federal annually.
Yep.
You can spend some farm to market on bridges as a matching fund to that federal aid. You can pay your 20% matching with farm to market if it's on the farm to market system.
Right.
Hickory Grove one is not, so you couldn't
do that.
But still
$350,000 coming in
annually.
Yep.
And that's, let's see, I showed that in the yellow on the spreadsheet here. It shows $315,000 there right now. It changes from year to year, our formula to swap, but that gets you in the general area.
Just general is all I'm looking for. And then the state, you said they have their own formula. You said like $2 million that they have in that fund. Do we generally see any of those dollars?
No, as I mentioned, one of the ADT was a pretty big factor in that, and you got to have probably an 8 to a 10 mile detour. And we, the only two bridges we really have with detours that be anywhere close would be Peterson Pit, and another one we just replaced. I forget which one it is, but they're new bridges, so we won't have to worry about those for 75 years.
So I can pencil in zero there.
Yeah.
On average. And then local, you said $80,000 that we put in secondary roads budget for repair of existing bridges. Do we put anything in there right now as our budget sits for replacing any of these bridges? Or is it all based on that federal funding?
Locally, we do some small bridges, like the letting we just had today. Those are culverts and bridges. Sometimes we fit bridges into that, but they're smaller type stuff. We can't really ever afford the bigger stuff.
But what per year do we try to fit into that?
So
today what we looked at was what, $150,000?
Our local construction program is usually $400,000 a year.
For bridges?
And roads. Combined, so yeah, how you break that out varies from year to year.
All right.
But just lastly, I wanted to point out our bridge inspection report. We get that June 11th. Sit down with our consultant and go over that. So we'll have some more data on if there's other big changes out there on any of our bridges. And it's just an initial thought. This is what I kind of want you to go away thinking about on how we're going to rank for closure and if it's even possible. This was an initial attempt. It's very easy. I looked at ADT. Anything under 25, and we have 26 of those bridges. That was a starting point. You don't want any of those to be on the farm to market system. And there's five of those 26 for, so take those out. Detour length, like I say, Story County, it is not a factor anywhere. They're all four or less. And
did you like this Kansas report that you showed us? I mean, is this a substantive report? I'd like to know more about it because it looks to me like if you get anything that's less than a 4 mile detour and you have three cars a day going across it, they're saying that economically it doesn't make sense to ever close a bridge like that. But I don't know what they use to.
I'll email that to you. It was a pretty short report. I thought it would be a little longer than what it was, but it's just two pages, I think. But I'll email it to you so you can look at that
data. Yeah, I just want to know where they got their numbers. Did somebody just make it up, or did they actually do some cost-benefit analysis?
Yeah, it was a little more involved than just that chart, but not a whole lot more.
Okay. Yeah.
I think they came to the answer pretty quickly, so they didn't need a lot more investigation. I'll forward that to you. So in the end, when I looked at this quick way, I just ended up with 21 bridges. But out of those 21, we had one that was already on a closed road. Two were field accesses that we're responsible for, but we can't really get rid of. And one was a driveway to a house. So that left us down to just 17 bridges. And a number of those bridges are newer already. So that's just starting to whittle it down. But in the end, I don't know how we're going to come up with a chart saying, I don't think you want to put a chart together on a bridge that's in good shape saying this is our target to close. That's not going to go over well with the public. But I can see why you want to have something to go with, but I'm struggling with how to get there. I wanted to point out the data we had so you can start thinking about ways we could put something like that together.
Well, I think you did a great job. I mean, what it tells me is you got us down to 17 that are even remotely feasible for us to discuss.
Yep.
And of those 17, I think you accurately point out there's going to be a bunch of those that we don't need to discuss right now. So what it comes down to me is there anything on that 17 that it makes sense to look at starting to discuss? And then the second part that I think this board better recognize, and I hope when I say this, everybody remembers how reluctant I am to spend county dollars and how hard we go on that. The reality is we as a board are going to have to seriously look at upping what we're putting in to both this bridge repair of you said $80,000 there, and then you said $400,000 is the local funds that we throw in that you use for both roads and bridges. I mean, we're just going to have to take a long, hard look about upping those dollars. And Darren, don't get me wrong, that would not for me entail increasing operations in secondary road. That would just increase the dollars to a level where you can actually be able to get in and dig into, especially some of these small projects that, that you guys have time to do. I mean, I think ultimately that's where this thing ends up. Wayne, anything to add?
Well, I think your assessment is right on target. The question again, and this gives us a blueprint to begin to look at that. Again, the whole funding concept is so above most of us in terms of, you know, not only the county's contribution, but federal and state aid and farm to market versus this or that and what we're actually eligible to. And I don't know if we've ever really sat down and talked about whether that $80,000 that we put in is the right number, or should that number be increased at some point. And from what I'm hearing you say, and what I'm hearing Darren say, is that right now it's enough to get by, but it's certainly not going to be probably enough for us to make some tough decisions down the road. And so if we could build that fund in some way and have those funds really designated and reserved for bridge and repair, is that the proper way to do it? And I think that's something we'd have to visit with the auditor's office and with your help and talking about that as we move into the next year's budgeting process.
Yeah, but it's either come up with more money or decide what we're going to reduce, and that's right. Where Rick's getting, how do we prioritize those? And that's what I'm trying to do here.
I think that's what we have to do because we could give you all the money we could possibly come up with, and with 200 and some bridges in the county,
we're not going to get them all.
You could spend every dime of it.
Well, and you're not going to have time to do it.
No.
I mean, even if there's dollars there, we're never going to get to the staffing level where there's going to be time to do those things. Darren, you did a great job putting this together, but I think you came here looking for direction. This is the direction that I would offer. Those 17 bridges that pencil out at the bottom that fit the criteria, the initial criteria for maybe bridges that we could consider having on a list to not repair down the road, I think we need to see something from you on what those 17 bridges are, where they are. But I also think we need to see the other end, which is, to me, the bridges that don't qualify under the federal funding models, but that are huge priorities for us, and specifically whittle that one down to the bridges that are approaching that point that we need to start thinking about what we're going to do with them, because to me, that'll help us get to a better understanding of what kind of local funding we're talking about. If we know it's not going to ever qualify for the federal, we'll keep that five-year list rolling. And like you said, we've got a couple bridges on there that we've already replaced that are still showing up on there because the feds haven't gotten taken them off. But I need to know that list of ones that are never going to, or we don't think are ever going to be on that federal list, that we're going to have to do something with. So maybe I'm down now to where I'm asking you for two lists, the 17 and then maybe the top 17 that don't qualify for federal funds.
Yep, and I kind of give you that list. I skipped over this sheet. This is our priority sheet we go over every year. It starts with number 30 because the top 29 are in the program. These are the ones I always give you that these aren't in the program, but some of these we need to be keeping an eye on, or they're possible closures. And so we do go over that every year. The part I'm struggling with is I gave you that list of 17 at the end. There's bridges on this list that don't fall in there, but they make the most sense
to close.
So when you come up with the closure list, it's much more difficult than the which one are we going to replace first, because closure has a whole different set of criteria to it.
What I would suggest to you is, as you go through and do your day-to-day job, which involves looking at all the bridges, every time you see one that you think, oh, we got to put some work into, it can be a tenth of a second kind of conversation you have with yourself of, is this a bridge we really need? And for most of them, Darren, it's going to be immediate. Yes, this is a bridge we really need, so we got to do what we got to do. But for those ones that you come back and you go, huh, I'm not sure, then I think it rests with this board to start to gather the information on any of those bridges, and knowing full well that on most of them, we're going to come down to, yeah, we really do need it. But that doesn't eliminate the need for this group to go through the exercise of at least looking at it those.
And I probably want to leave you with the Hickory Grove Bridge in particular. What it kind of comes down to when you prioritize for closure, you kind of have to look at each one separately. And we're at the point where we have a closed bridge, so we're going to have to make a decision on that one within the next year or so here. We need to look at the area. If we decide to replace that one, which might be where I'm kind of leaning at this point, there's a bridge to the north that's where Hertz would have to take as a detour, another long wood bridge that's starting to get beat up the same way. I think we just need to take a look at that area and say, okay, we're going to replace this bridge knowing full well this bridge up here. That's probably going to be added to our list of closure.
Mile north of it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's not going to last long.
No.
Right.
No. But now, I mean, because it's taking more traffic now.
And help me with this. If that Hickory Grove Bridge does, in fact, its rating with the feds does get better or worse, depending on how you look at it, if it truly goes from that 50-whatever down to the 33 or somewhere in there, and you're telling us it's about a $450,000 roughly deal to do this, what kind of money would come from the feds for it if it shoots out ranked the right way?
That would be 80%. Yep. But since it's not on the farm to market system, the entire bridge would have to be put in our local bridge program up front.
Right.
So that would really look like we bumped up our local funding when it's a reimbursement program. But
right.
So we don't.
But, we would really bump it up, and then we would get 80% of that back.
20% would have to be local dollars. It could not be foreign to market.
And so I know we're still, 6 months away from you starting to work on your next budget, but I would just encourage you to at least start off looking at your budget that way.
Yep.
And then we just got to make the decision. And I think it's fair to say to anybody, nothing's going to happen with that bridge, for at least that long. So.
All right, thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we want to take care? Is Tyler coming back? Do we want to take care of that?
I'll take care of that next for Tyler.
Okay.
Okay. Let's do that before we get to public forum number two.
Okay, we totaled those out and all the numbers checked, which is good. I would point out we only had two bidders, but the one came in real good, and I would point out we do pre-approve these bidders up front, so they're pre-qualified. So if you have concerns over whether they're adequate or not, we do pre-qualify them up front, so we don't have a concern on that side of things. We have $180,000 budgeted in the local program, so this second bid came in considerably less than that, so that is good. And the total amount was $134,627.05 for Rognes Construction. So I'd like to get approval from the board to prepare a contract for Rognes.
Questions for Darren?
Nope.
Motion.
Move approval of the recommendation for Rognes Construction at the $134,627.05.
Second.
Further discussion. Clinton.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Done. Thanks, Darren. All right, public forum number two, comments from the public on items not on this agenda. Seeing no one moving to the microphone, I had to wait and see if Mike was moving to the microphone or not.
I was moving to the hallway.
Announcements from the supervisors. Wayne, anything?
Just very quickly, and I don't know if either of you have had an opportunity to read the latest email from Bill Heckroff concerning the movement at the legislature. Coming out of conference committee, there is discussion about the property tax bill proposal. And yesterday I sent a request to our assessor to see if this would be a major concern for Story County. And it appears like the legislature is moving toward supporting the conference committee's recommendation, which potentially could have some major negative impacts to counties and cities. And It really deals with the classification of multi-residential property, the apartments, mobile home parks, etc., and the loss of property tax revenue. Some counties are going to be hit far more severe than maybe Story County, because some time ago I was told that a lot of the apartments and so forth had already been converted in Story County, so we won't see as large of an impact as, say, maybe a Linn County or some of the others. But part of the question that we're being asked to consider is whether we want to contact members of the legislature and ask them to vote no. So I just want you to take a look at your email. You probably just received it. And if you have any suggestions or thoughts whether or not the county should submit communication on this regard, I think you are aware that we did register from ISAC and not in support of the bill, so I don't think it really changes pretty much where we are. And it was mainly because of the potential negative impact. So I just call that to your attention, and I realize that this is an ongoing controversial discussion, and I think it's just something that we're going to have to deal with as the legislature moves forward as to whether or not they can reach any kind of agreement on property tax for this year.
Super. Thank you. Paul, anything?
Pass.
And last but not least, let me congratulate not only Michelle, but Paul Toot for your graduation. You got a child graduating this year, too. And there may be other county employees that we're not aware of who are having graduates this year.
How about congratulations to all the graduates in Story County?
Congratulations to all the graduates in Story County.
Real quickly, had coffee with Liz Beck after she presented to us on Heartland last week, and had a nice conversation with her. And I'm actually going to meet with her and her new board president on Thursday morning just to continue the conversation about where Heartland's headed. You guys may have heard of their new board president. Her name is Jane Halliburton. And so I'll go have a nice coffee Thursday morning and have that conversation.
Good.
With that, if there's nothing else, I would sure love a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. We are adjourned.
Yeah. They have to start by mid-September. Our goal is to get J.B. Holland's doing two box pulls for us this summer. They got plans, but they didn't bid. We thought we'd get good prices from them.
Yeah.
They didn't. I don't know why they didn't bid. We still got to